Willkommen zu einer neuen Folge von Erlebnis Irland, dem Podcast für alle, die Irland nicht nur bereisen, sondern wirklich verstehen möchten. Heute nehmen wir euch mit auf die Dingle-Halbinsel, eine der geschichtsträchtigsten Regionen der Grünen Insel. Zwischen wilden Küsten, uralten Pilgerwegen und geheimnisvollen Steinanlagen begegnen wir einem Mann, der sein Leben der Geschichte seiner Heimat gewidmet hat, T.P. O'Connor. Gemeinsam stehen wir an einem der beeindruckendsten Ringforts Irlands und sprechen über rätselhafte unterirdische Gänge, Feen und alte Legenden, über den heiligen Brandon, mittelalterliche Pilger, vorchristliche Göttinnen und darüber, warum viele dieser Orte bis heute von einer ganz besonderen Atmosphäre umgeben sind. Freut euch auf eine Reise durch mehr als 3000 Jahre Geschichte. Erzählt von einem Menschen, der die Geschichten seiner Heimat nicht aus Büchern kennt, sondern von Generation zu Generation weitergegeben bekommen hat. Viel Freude bei dieser besonderen Folge von Erlebnis Irland.
Well, my name is T.P. O'Connor. I'm from here, the Ballydavid area. It's very far back, as far as Europe is concerned. We're the most westerly point of Europe, of the EU. It's a place called Balnaul or Ballydavid, and our harbour below us is called Smarowic Harbour, meaning Greasing Harbour. It was named by the Vikings, and we have lots of archaeological sites here. It's a beautiful area to live, and it's crimeless, no crime here. We're very lucky to be part of the area.
Yeah, that sounds good. And we are now in one of the biggest ring forts in the area.
Well, we have four different types of ring fort. We have the small ring fort. There are thousands of them in the country. They'd be a single family. Then we have a bigger one called the Rath. And the Rath has two ditches and around it to protect it. And as a matter of fact, there's a castle built in one of them just back in Fintry, a few miles back the road. Then the third one is the Cashel. And we're in a Cashel now, and you can see they're substantial. For that time when they were built, you can just imagine the amount of bark and stone that went into these cashels. And the fourth one are called promontory forts. They're defensive forts that were built along the coastline with water on three sides, and there was only one side to be defended. You have some on land as well, but most of them are along the coast. But these cashels have been a mystery for years. Because in most of the ring forts and cashels, we have little things we call soutrains. And soutrains are little tunnels under the ground that go, some of them only maybe 50 metres from the fort. More of them go on a long way, maybe best part of maybe half a kilometre. But they have been a mystery for years because they don't know exactly what they were used for.
And we're standing right in front of one.
We're standing right in front of one here, and you can see it's less than a metre wide, and it's less than a half a metre high. So you wonder what they were for. Some people think they were for animals, small animals. Other people think they were places that people hid. But sure, if you had one in every fort, everybody knew that it was there for that purpose. Mm-hmm. And I wouldn't like to be cut down there, would you?
No. Not very comfortable. So you have lots of flat stones there. Yeah. It's quite rough, and the moss and ferns next to it. And I can think that there would be small animals like rabbits or so.
Yes. Or some people then say it was for food storage. It was cool. But then you could just imagine the rats. Mm-hmm. You'd want to put cats down there with the food, wouldn't you? So anyway... Other people then believed that that's where the fairies were. The Tuatha Dé Danann, they went underground. And the people that only appeared at night. We had two types of fairy. We had the fallen angels, the angels that God threw out of heaven. And then we had the fairies that came from the underground fairies. And these were the Tuatha Dé Danann. But... That's the mystery, and that's why so many of these forts are untouched, because people were afraid to touch them, because they have bad luck because of them.
Have you ever seen one?
No. And we have had no fairies since the electricity came in, or since cars came automobiles. You see, we have lots of stories about people coming from different places at night, meeting funerals. Now, since the automobile became, we'll say, popular, nobody has seen any of those funerals, and nobody has seen a fairy since the electricity came in. But then there are other things that people associate with them. But then that depends. I mean, the fairies, it was a great way to frighten people. And as you know, for generations all over the world, fear has been the weapon to keep people at bay. Mm-hmm. It's the way to keep people, you keep people at bay, fear.
Are descriptions how those fairies look like?
So it all depends. You see, you had the bad fairies and you had the good fairies. And the bad fairies, we had the old women that queened at night when people were to die. And if they heard certain noises and certain voices at night, they'd say there was somebody going to die. And there were certain families that were associated with those sounds. At night, then at graveyards, around graveyards was a place where fairies would be seen. You know, you'd hear some great stories about these fairies and the way they would frighten people. But I never saw one. I asked my father if he ever saw one. He never did. And he never had any association with anybody that had seen one. But I always remember a story he was telling us about. These two lads went out hunting rabbits one night. Okay. And they had a dog, and the dog killed the rabbit. And the rabbit was screeching. And just as the rabbit started to screech, there was music above the fence on the side of the hill. So it stopped, and then they went on, and after another couple of fields, they killed another rabbit. And the music started up again. So they were getting frightened. So they went on for another while anyway, and they killed the third rabbit, and the music was much closer. So they ran home. Mm-hmm. They were frightened. And about a half an hour after, the musician came in. He was after twisting his ankle. It was their brother.
Okay.
See? So you see, this is, my father used to be trying to tell us that he was the fairies until mm-hmm. he came home mm-hmm. with his ankle twisted.
Yeah.
And you would hear, that, you know, people just made them up. Anyway, the kids today know very little about, they know of them, but then it's a thing of the past.
Yeah, and I think it's also because we're getting less attached to nature, don't we? So we use the automobile much more, and we are on the TV all the time and internet, and we don't really look around us, don't we?
Yes, but you see, in the old days, then you had lots of animal sounds at night, and maybe they were associated with the fairies as well. And we're losing a lot of our birds and our animals, and it's time to have a serious look at nature. But we're very lucky here because 2 weeks ago it was announced that we're living in a national park. And not alone is the land part of the national park, the sea is also. Because in the 90s, for 3 years, we managed the coast, within 6 miles of the coast. And after 3 years, you wouldn't believe the way things changed and the way nature started to come back and the way birds and fish and everything developed. But then there was a change of government and the whole project was dropped. Okay. And we went back to raping the seas again. But I think the European policy is crazy. I honestly believe that there's more fish being killed just to keep big boats, big factory ships in the water. Whereas if they left the coastal communities kill the fish with small boats, there'd be plenty of fish and it'd be beautiful fresh fish. But now it's a huge industry and they're going to wipe it out.
It's too much.
And it's European policy now. It's not Irish policy, it's European policy. But there must be, somebody up there must be thinking properly. It's like the Wild Atlantic Way. Nobody thought of the Wild Atlantic Way until we got a minister who they mocked. And he came in with very practical things. The Wild Atlantic Way has saved the west of Ireland. Mm-hmm. Now, if these projects like making national parks out of places where there's so much archaeology, so much nature left yet, where the language and the culture is alive, it's a great idea. But it's up to us now to build on that. And I think if we brought the right projects to Europe, you know, it would be good. It would be beneficial.
I think so too, because you've got lots to offer. You have a beautiful nature. You have the archaeology. You have lots of ring forts and the beehive huts, and also the galerias.
Galerias oratory, yeah. But the oratories. Now, there was a man who used to work for Fault Ireland. He's retired now. His name was Peter Harveston, and he was an archaeologist. And Peter and myself were great friends. He often came in for the tea. And he did a study on these ring forts, especially these cushions. And here we have a walk. It's a very old walk. It's about 3,000 years old. It was there before Christianity. And it comes from different parts of the peninsula, and it goes through here and to the top of Mount Brendan. We call it Cusan na Naive, or the Saint's Walk. And Peter came back to me anyway after he did the study, and he says, "You're going to laugh at me when I tell you." And I said, "Why?" "We thought they were, these places were where the chieftains lived." "No," he says, "they were the first bed and breakfast." And I said, "What do you mean, Peter?" He says, "This was the pilgrim area. This pilgrim had to be done before you went to Compostela in Spain. Dingle was the Compostela port. And they left Dingle to go to Compostela, but they had to do this one first." And he said, "People had to stay somewhere." And he figured out that with the different buildings and the different structures and the way they were laid out, that there was definitely accommodation.
Maybe these were the parts underneath them were something the storage for of early beer?
Well, I don't know about early beer. You have to go to Germany for the beer. But I don't know about early beer. I'd say it was mostly
fermented stuff.
It was poutine that we're making here. Yeah. They were making much stronger than beer. I never heard of beer in the old days, but it was always poutine, and it drove them mad. That's why there was a man said, God invented drink, because if he didn't do that, the Irish would rule the world. It saved the world from the Irish drinking.
That sounds like a good idea in that case.
The Irish were drunk all the time. You know, by the way, we were drunk all the time, but no, it saved the world from us. But I suppose for a small country, we do hit heavier than our weight, really, you know.
Mm-hmm. So you mentioned the cashels as a part of an like something like Airbnb nowadays. How many about were found? Yeah,
because that was one of the reasons. You see, they're all along some of them are gone completely. They've disappeared, mm-hmm. but they were all along this walk, and that's why he associated them with the walk. They were there for the pilgrims, mm-hmm. and they were part of the pilgrimage, but. Kenmalkaidir then was the spot they all gathered just down here, down the road, and they left from there then to the top of Mount Brendan. It's still very popular. The pilgrimage was done on St. Brendan's Day just 2 weeks ago, and there'll be another pilgrimage on the 29th of June. They go up there two or three times a year now, but any day you go to Mount Brendan now, there are people there.
Is there mass on those days on the top?
They do the same masses. In 1868, 20,000 people went up there because the bishop went up there.
Wow.
So you see, religion was very strong in the country at that time. And 20,000, you can just imagine 20,000 people in the hills. Should have God, they must have been like dandruff on a black coat. They were everywhere.
Mm-hmm. So you could see them all over.
Yeah. But now, it's on the other side of the hill. There's a place called Clochan. It's in Brendan. Clochan is associated with beehive huts because that's what they mean in Irish. Clochan. That's the Irish word for them. And we have Clochan Dove down here. And we have another Clochan back in Ventry. And they're all associated with beehive huts. But during the 30s, the government took stones from anywhere they could get them to build the roads after we got our freedom. Mm. And they took the Clochans wherever they got them because the stones were perfect for the job.
Yeah, absolutely. So it saved, it would kind of recycle.
Yeah. And I suppose it made sense to them, but they had no idea the damage they were doing to our culture.
Sure.
Yeah. And down here then in the graveyard just below us, There was an old man who lived here. He was a bachelor, and I was very friendly with him. I used to love to talk to him. And I asked him if he remembered when the new part was built onto the graveyard. And he said he did. He was a very small boy. And he said, they drew all the clochans away first. And I said, he says, that garden was full of beehives. And he says, that was a little college, a little monastery and a little college. And that's where the students lived. And during the famine, people that came to the coast for fish lived in those little clochans, and they lived here. They lived everywhere. Anywhere they could get shelter, they lived. And he said those clochans were until the 30s, and in the 30s they were taken out for building roads.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so they did something like others did before them, like the Romans did with the Greeks and stuff.
Yeah.
So they just took things they could use in order to recycle on for their own buildings.
That's right.
Yeah. It was less work.
It was, of course. It was saving money, and that's what it's all about at the end of the day. It's so handy to have it. Everything was drawn with horses and carts at the time, and it was so handy to have a place where you could go into without any problem, fill your load and come out, and the horse wouldn't be under any strain. It was so simple and cheap in comparison to cutting stones.
So you mentioned Mount Brandon and Brandon. Can you tell us something about the saint?
Well, the saint, it's amazing. He's all over the place. Everywhere you go, he's in Tenerife. He's in the Canaries. He's in the Azores. He's everywhere. His name, they have little. There are places named after him everywhere. And I believe. Now we had we had a parish priest here who studied him, and he said that he went twice. He the first time he came back because four of his monks died from boredom and from exposure. And they remodeled the boat. And he came here just up in a place called Kosovodig. Kosovodig means the little inlet of the entertainer or the funny man. And he came here to pick up an entertainer before he left because he needed entertainment in the boat. And then he said they went to America. Now he said they definitely went to Newfoundland. Whether they went to all the way to America or not, it couldn't be proven. Mm-hmm. But they know they were in Newfoundland. And his confessions tell you every step of the way. But they were written in a way that they were written at that time, and it would be difficult for people of today to understand the way they were written. But he was writing what he saw.
I think he wrote that he saw like dragons spitting fire, and it was meant that it was Iceland.
Iceland, but he there was the island of sheep. He called the Faroes. He called the Iceland. He mentioned the fires in Iceland. You know, the volcano and the dragons. That's the way it was spitting out like a dragon's tongue. And he had a name for everything he saw. The icebergs, the pillars of ice, he called them, because they never saw icebergs down here before. Mm-hmm. And but then from what we hear here, from the old stories here about Brendan, he went away and he was gone for years, and then he came back. And when he came back, then he was like a pop star.
I think so, because he had lots of things to tell, and it was
and everywhere he went, the crowds followed him, and he built his monasteries all down along the west coast, and he must have been a very popular man, and he lived until he was into his 90s. He was an old man when he died, but when you it says in the Brown Dawn, Melchior was the patron saint here, and how this fellow Melchior was able to stand his ground with Brendan, I'll never know, because this is the parish of Melchior, and down here there's a church. It's the church of Melchior, and Melchior was from Donegal. Melchior, Mac le Ronan, Mac le Riola, Melchior, the son of Ronan, the son of the King of Ulster, and he was brought down here at that time. Because you had a pagan goddess here that they couldn't manage. And he was brought on. He must have been a tough man to manage her. And he did. He must have. And a lot of this area around here is called after him. But everything else is called after Brendan.
And you said that Brendan was one of the main people here, but there was also like a goddess.
We had that, that was before Brandon, the goddesses. Mm-hmm. You had Count Sibyl, Sibyl Head. Sibyl was a goddess by the Greek and by the Romans, and it seems she was here as well. And you have, there was another goddess then, you have behind Moor. She was, there were goddesses. Now, my mother had a story for us when we were kids. There's an island called the Sleeping Giant. Mm-hmm. But she said, no, it was the Sleeping Giantess. And she had this story where this giantess had a big chariot and it was pulled by elves. And she said she eat pigeons' breasts and she drank doe's milk. And every autumn she went to lie down to go to sleep. And when she rose in the spring, everything rose with her. Mm. And that she, eventually she went to sleep forever. And she says that's her out there. The sleeping giant was a, is a sleeping giantess. But all those little stories were there. I suppose there are, in every country in the world you have those stories. But she, my mother associated her with the island. And she was a fertility goddess. But there's another goddess then supposed to be buried up on the side of Lathive over here. And I was up several times. And there are stones there, and they said that's where she's buried. And I have met people who were going up there looking for her grave. But you see, you can't, you don't know. But goddesses, long before the time of Christianity, were very popular too.
Yeah, I think so, because you had early population here on Dingle.
Yeah. But talking about women, just for a minute, women at that time, the early Christians were Celtic, it was Celtic Christianity, and women were equal to men. And that's why Rome had such a problem with early Christianity, because our Christianity, because I could be a bishop, and your husband could be a bishop, and you could be the abbot or the abbess, and we'd have to do what you told us. Well, no, that's happening yet. Women tell men what to do and they do what they're told. But at that time, that was pretty powerful. Mm-hmm. And a woman had equal status. And they had divorce. These early Christians could divorce each other. And they could, what they did was they married, they'd have a contract for so many years. And when the time would be up, they could renew the contract or they could part. And the kids, I was asking an old Monsignor one time, but I says, what about the children? The children, he says, were not belong to the parents, they were belong to the community. So the communities were small and they were intact. And I said to him then, but how did that work out? And he says, look at the life of Brendan. The first thing he said, read it. And Brendan was weaned when he was 12 months old and he was given to St. Ita. She was a nun. And she kept him until he was 7 years and then she gave him to St. Erc. And Erc had been a druid and he had changed to Christianity and now he's a bishop. And he prepared him for life. So they prepared kids for what they were best at. And that included women. There was no difference between men and women. You could have women stonemasons and women doing men's work. And you could have men doing women's work. And I'm sure it was a great system. So then
it was very progressive at that time.
It was. It was. You see, we don't... we don't have written
records
of those times because you see, the British were here too long, and they shifted us around too much, and records were lost. So everything we have was passed on orally more than in writing. There are certain things we have in writing from the Four Masters, wonderful stuff, but the ordinary local stuff, most people were illiterate anyway. So then we had the schools, the head schools, they called them. God, they were wonderful schools. And they taught people Latin as well as Irish and English. And when those people went to Europe, Latin then was an international language. And being Catholic in Europe and being able to speak Latin was very handy. You were straight in. And a lot of them were made counts of the Holy Roman Catholic Church. Mm-hmm. And that gave you permission to go to any country you liked, any time you liked. So that's how the Irish penetrated Europe at that time. And lots of the big wine merchants in France and Spain were of Irish descent.
Mm. And there was a big exchange also with literacy.
Yeah.
Because you had lots of people that wrote their stories down and sent it back to Europe. And
yeah, but they were the monks. Mm-hmm. The monks, only for the monks, we'd have nothing. The monks wrote pages and pages of stuff. And but a lot of it got lost as well. You have the book, like the Book of Kells, beautifully decorated book. And only for the monks kept records. But then, I suppose, when you keep a record, the record as you see it. I might see it completely different. There's always two or three different sides to those things. All we can do is talk about them.
Sure. And there are also a lot of people here that are really good in singing and writing poems.
There are. You get, I suppose there's a bit of the poet in us all. And there's a song in everybody, really. But the Irish express themselves, don't they? We have this thing always. I remember when I was young, I was born in Dingle in a pub. And the fair day, they would come in and when they'd have a little drop drink, one fellow clapped the other fellow on the back and he said, give us a song. And he'd start singing. You'd never see it in the pub anymore. And most of the songs they were singing were traditional songs. And for kids, they were boring. Because they went on and on and on. And most of the songs had a story attached to them. Wonderful songs. When you get older and when you realise, when you understand them, they were wonderful stories. And we were very lucky we had ordinary fellows here that were writing poetry. These people now would be self-educated. They might have they might spend a few years in school, but they'd mostly be self-educated. And their poetry would be simple stuff. But when you read it and read what they're writing about, wonderful stuff. It's simple. They're not famous because of it, but at the same time, they're passing on information that we would never have known only for them, in a beautiful way. So there is quite a few poets in this part of the country. I don't know about other parts of the country, but there's a lot of help now for people who want to write. And we have better education, and they're better able to write, and some of our poets now are excellent.
What is your favourite song?
My favourite song would be, most of my songs would be Irish songs. My favourite song is An Róisín Duff. And I couldn't sing it.
But what is it about?
It's a love song. Aye. In Irish. And but it's not the Róisín Duff, the Black Rose.
Okay.
And the Black Rose is not a woman, it's Ireland. And they wrote, lots of songs were written about Ireland, and they called her by a woman's name. And Drimmin Down Dealish. It was another one. Drimmin Down Dealish is a cow. A roan cow. And this guy is calling his country a roan cow. And the way he loves this cow, you see. But the songs are written in a way that the English thought they were singing love songs to women. No, they were not. It was the country that was involved.
But the cow is also a big symbol here, isn't it?
Yes.
Also in the Boyne Valley, so there's a connection there.
There is a huge the connection with the cow. But all animals, the Celts revered the hare. The hare was their favourite animal, and it would be my favourite animal too, my favourite wild animal. I don't know how they're surviving, because down through the years they've survived, and they're very plentiful now. I see them often, and it's great. And it's one of the native animals that is really thriving. The fox is another animal that's thriving here. And I wonder where they get their food, because we have no rabbits. The rabbits are gone.
They're all at Beara.
So lots of them. There are rabbits in Beara, aren't they? But here, you see, the problem is I also love birds. And when I was a child, one of my favourite, when I think of my childhood, I think of birds always, especially skylarks and thrushes, because we were always up early in the morning, because we had to milk cows before we went to school, and we'd be up maybe at 6 o'clock, and in the summertime, my God, the orchestra, it was absolutely beautiful. You'd love to be up, and even as a small child, that's gone. The orchestra's gone, and I don't know why, because we don't have much, the farming here is not intensive. They don't spray insecticides. Mm-hmm. And I'd say to myself, where are the birds gone? Where is this activity gone? There was such a loss to the area. We don't have the cocoa anymore. We don't have the corncrake anymore. Well, farming methods wiped out the corncrake, but the cocoa I don't understand. This year I've only seen about 6 swallows, and I remember thousands of swallows when I was young. But at that time you had, the farmers were farming, and the farmers' sheds were full of swallows' nests, and the farmers never, then even though the swallows were a nuisance, shitting all over the place, the farmers never minded. As long as they brought out their little chicks and came back, and then when they see them coming back, they say, welcome home. They're coming home to where they were born. But outside my house, there are 3 wires, and when they started to gather to go back to the sunny lands again in the late summer, you'd see them collecting on the wires. Last year, about a dozen or so. It's not good. It's a pity, and we have that problem now. But I think that I don't know. I know it's very difficult. There are 27 countries in Europe. But I'd love to kick their arses sometimes. European policy does not suit us here, a lot of it. Mm. It cleaned out everything we had. You know, everything is too intensive. And it seems that there are...
Everything is regulated.
Oh, yeah, I mean...
The size even, of food, the yeah, size
you have to, you have to. If you have hens now, you have to have it documented. Isn't it amazing? Even a hen. It's gone that bad now. I have pity for the kids. It's the children I have the most pity for, because they won't have any freedom, not like we had. I mean, everybody now is tagged. Let alone are the animals tagged, the people are tagged. And that's not good. I don't think it is anyway. So what can you do? That's modern technology. And I wouldn't mind. All you have to do now is turn off the electricity and you'll cripple the world. Mm-hmm. You don't have to throw a bomb, nothing. Just quench the lights.
Put in the wires.
Quench the wires and you have the whole place crippled. All their information and all their money is in computers. And if the computer is turned off, you have nothing.
And here you have a fort that exists for over how many years?
Yeah.
About 1,000 years?
Yeah. But if you haven't it in your pocket now, you're in trouble. Mm. So I don't know. I much prefer to be where I am now than to be, we'll say, 4 or 5 or maybe 10 years old. We had a great time because I was born during the war. And I remember after the war, things were very scarce. And people were having a tough time, but the food they had was wholesome and was healthy. A lot of people were hungry. But then things got better. And it's wonderful to be living at a time when things are getting better.
Mm, because then you have hope.
You have hope.
Yeah. Were there a lot of soldiers here in the area?
Sorry?
Were there a lot of soldiers here in the area during the war?
A lot of?
Soldiers?
Oh, no, we had no soldiers. You see, we were neutral. And during the war, the whole thing, a lot of Irish people died in the war. A lot of Irish people went to fight in the war. And I don't know. We never saw soldiers. I mean, the war did not affect us here. And anyway, we're too far back from everything. It's only lately that the country has got smaller because of technology. And the roads coming to the area are much better now. Before that, the roads were terrible and nobody wanted to come back here. But now we have broadband. Uh-huh. And not alone have we broadband, we have fibre optic. And people come here from Germany and from France and different parts of Europe, and they tell us our internet is better than theirs.
You know, that's true.
In rural areas at home. And you'd be saying, well, do you think the Germans would be the first to have it?
But no. We in our school, when we had COVID, we didn't have internet at all. No. Because they capped it, because they had a building site close to it, and it was off like 2 months.
Yeah, oh. You were off for 2 months. Well, it's wonderful, because you can contact any place immediately.
Das war unsere Reise zu den geheimnisvollen Ringforts der Dingelhalbinsel. Ein herzliches Dankeschön an T.P. O'Connor, der seine Erinnerungen, sein Wissen und die Geschichten seiner Heimat mit uns geteilt hat. Gerade diese persönlichen Erzählungen zeigen, dass Geschichte nicht nur aus archäologischen Funden besteht, sondern vor allem aus Menschen, die sie lebendig halten. Wenn euch diese Episode gefallen hat, freuen wir uns sehr über eine Bewertung auf eurer Podcast-Plattform. Damit helft ihr uns, noch mehr Menschen für Irland und seine faszinierende Kultur zu begeistern. Weitere Fotos, Hintergrundinformationen und viele Eindrücke unserer Reisen findet ihr auf unseren Social-Media-Kanälen sowie auf unserer Patreon-Seite. Bis zur nächsten Folge von Erlebnis Irland, wenn wir gemeinsam wieder ein Stück der grünen Insel entdecken. Slán, macht's gut und bis bald.